Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, I'm Sean Kanan coming to you from the United States. I'm sitting down with Chris Gordon on Hellblazer Biz. Don't go anywhere because I'll figure out where you live.
Everyone, I have the honour and the privilege of the company of Sean Kanan today, who's joining me from LA. So, hey, Sean, how are you?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for accepting to be on it. It's a privilege. It's, you know, I say I followed you a while. And
we're all basically on lockdown, so what the hell else did I have to do?
Right? Yeah, true. Yeah, but it's not like you've got auditions to do or self-tapes. Or exactly. You know,
I'm not due to go back into the kitchen for another feeding for at least 15 minutes. So,
I mean, there's some people think actors don't do anything anyway, do they? When they're not on screen, so.
You're right.
Which is a complete lie. Obviously, you know, the 200 people I've talked to, and it's like the amount of
it's amazing how during all of this, I'm actually. Other than being in actual production, I'm really busy. I've been really busy. So I think staying busy is part of the things that, you know, helps keep me sane, at least. I would imagine for other people too. That and alcohol, but staying busy definitely has helped.
I think so, especially this, like we mentioned before, especially lockdown and COVID, and it's like 6 months. Like I said, I'm starting to feel like Jack Nicholson in The Shining. It's just, it's like, you know, because I sit there, I mean, we're working IT, is my main job, so I'm typing the computer all day, looking at the screen. It's like, I almost started to type all work and no play makes. And like I said, there's only so much Netflix you can do. You can probably complete, well.
I think I've watched every single serial killer documentary that's on Netflix and Amazon Prime. And I don't know. I like those things. Like, if anyone ever goes through, if I die and they go through my watch list, there's going to be a lot of questions about who Sean Kanan really was.
taking hints and tips.
It's like at any given time, Ted Bundy and Charles Manson have like 10 different things on TV, and they're dead, and they've got a better career than I do. So it's just, you know. Watching, trying to figure out what their secret is.
Yeah. Getting some tips. Yeah, yes. It's crazy. I mean, you're right, though. I mean, they are interesting documentaries, but you're right about how many there are out there. It's
I've watched everything else. I mean, my wife and I have binge-watched probably 30 different series. And, you know, it's at the point now where, like, all right, we're going to do Shark Week. Okay, let's do Shark Week. You know, just as...
And then you get things like Ghost Adventures, where now they're dead and they're gone, and you've had the documentary about their life. Now you go into the documentary to try and find them in death.
Exactly. Right. I like that.
Yeah. You're right. There's only so much you can watch. I mean, we're currently watching World's Toughest Prisons at the moment. That's another one that we just got through. Like you say, you just have to look at these series and just go through them all.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's crazy. So many series to watch. And we've soon got Cobra Kai, obviously, back to Netflix.
Cobra Kai is coming to Netflix in, August 28th.
It is.
Which is 7 days. For those guys, because Netflix is a much larger platform for them, and it means it's going to introduce the show to hopefully an expanded audience. So that's terrific. Oh,
yeah. It is, yeah, definitely. And I love how they're doing, because people have been saying, obviously, I know a lot of things about season 3 and it's taking time. Well, they're translating it to 30 languages, for starters. But it's also...
It's unbelievable. You know, those guys have done something really incredible. And, Billy and Ralph and Marty Cove are terrific in it, not to mention all the younger kids. So hats off to them and the producers.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's going to be cracking. Very good indeed. So, talk about yourself, Sean. I mean, you have had a long career in acting and business. You're not that old, so he's not the same age as me. But I'll say, you started out young, and so you've had a great, you know, you've had a you know, you're saying there that the serial killers have got a more better career than you. Well, that's, you know, I always have a joke.
I've been very fortunate. I really have.
Yeah, you've learned this. What made you choose acting? Why did you want to follow that in the first place?
You know, I came from a small town, a small city, about 25,000 people. And, you know, we lived maybe about 5 miles from the Amish people. And so just to give you an idea, it was a small place. And I think, you know, when you live somewhere like that, you really, especially as a kid, you tend to dream beyond your immediate horizon, want to see what the bigger world looks like. I knew at about 15, I wanted to do something to really kind of express myself. I didn't really know what it was. And by the time I was about 16, 17, I really started to crystallize the idea that I wanted to be an actor. While I was studying political science, I started dabbling in acting classes and decided that, you know, if I was going to be serious with it, I either had to move to New York City or Los Angeles. I figured it would be easier to starve where the weather was nice. So I moved to Los Angeles and, you know, I just started banging on doors and I had no friends or no family in the business and probably made about every mistake you can, but, you know, was fortunate to have, you know, just slowly and incrementally made progress until I finally won the part of Mike Barnes in The Karate Kid 3. And, you know, because that was the third installment of a worldwide franchise, it really elevated me to kind of a different level of visibility. And then things became easier. I don't want to say easy, but they became easier after that.
Okay. Excellent. That sounds great. I mean, you know, obviously, yeah, like you say, you make the mistakes, which is how you actually become successful. I think I don't think there's any successful person who hasn't actually learned from them, because you make the mistakes, you learn from them, and you can sort of move up and move on, which is good.
You know, and I think most people, it's funny, you know, I have my daughter is just turned 19, and you know, it's funny with kids and still with us, you know. So often in life, you really got to make the mistakes yourself. It doesn't matter what somebody tells you. Mm-hmm. You know, I can tell my child all sorts of things, and they need that empirical evidence of sometimes, you know, skinning their knees, so to speak, so that they, you know, learn and it's kind of ingrained. And, you know, for me, I've had to skin my knee many, many times to learn the same lesson. Now at 53 years old, I'm hopefully starting to universe a little bit more. But, you know, a lot of the sort of hard knocks that I had early on in my acting career were great looking back, because they taught me lessons and they helped me have a better understanding of the business. You know, not that every actor wouldn't want to have that career where you kind of just, you know, from the minute you start, you're on fire and have a straight vertical ascension. But there is something to be said for, you know, making some of these mistakes that maybe in the long run, it gives you more longevity.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, yeah, because some of you see some of these people who just come up, you know, like you're saying, they've just gone shot straight into that stardom.
Right.
You might see them for 3 months and that was it, and then they go, no, all the time, because there's some who do that and then they just like really take off. But
well, you know some of these people that their careers begin like that actually are able to maintain it, and I would wonder what you're like as a well-rounded person when you haven't experienced some failure and you experienced rejection and all of that. I'm a huge proponent of the story We Shall See. I don't know if you know it, but I'll tell you briefly if you want. It's I have a book coming out before Christmas, and it's kind of a self-help philosophy book about being your best self. And in it, I talk about how many of the things that kind of knock us on our ass and we initially view as being devastating and soul-crushing and all of that stuff, with the passage of some time, they suddenly are not the horrendous things that we think they are. In fact, they're some of our best teachers. And in fact, something that you think is crushing at the moment might turn out to be a gift from the universe. I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, my first marriage was a really difficult, not great marriage. Mm-hmm. And when we got divorced, I was crushed. But had that not happened, I wouldn't have been freed up to meet the woman of my dreams who, you know, now we just celebrated our 7th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And I've got a marriage that, you know, people envy. But at the moment, I was just crushed. And so I mentioned the story about We Shall See, and I'll try and expedite mm-hmm. it. So in the 7th century, in one of the southern provinces in China, there was an old farmer. And he lived with his only son and his only horse. And one day he went out to the corral, and his only horse had run away. And his neighbor said, "What bad luck?" And the farmer said, "We shall see." And the very next day, the horse comes running back into the corral at the head of 7 beautiful wild Mustangs. And the neighbor says, "What great luck. Now you can plow your fields in 1/7 of the time."
Yeah.
And the farmer said, "We shall see." And the next day, his only son went out to go break one of the Mustangs because they were wild. He was thrown mm-hmm. and broke his leg, which was a very serious injury at that time, even life-threatening. And his neighbor said, "What bad luck." And the farmer said, "We shall see." The next day, the local warlord came with 100 men behind him to conscript all the other young men in the village to go fight a distant war. But the farmer's son couldn't go because his leg was broken. And his neighbor said, "Good luck." And the farmer said, "We shall see." And on it goes and on it goes and on it goes. And you never know what is, you know, in the immediate moment, terrible luck wind up being life-saving.
Exactly. That's a cracking story as well.
I'll come back and I'll, when my book is done, I'll come back and I'll promote my book because.
Please do.
I'm really excited about it. Yeah.
No, I'll buy your book as well. So I love that. Okay. I love those self-help things. I think they're great. I used to always use Bruce Lee when nowhere near the same kind of standard and caliber, but I always used to love, when I started out my podcast, one of the first things I did was an episode based on Bruce Lee's saying, he goes, it's like the moon, you know, your finger pointing at the moon, do not concentrate on the moon or you miss all the heavenly glory. And it's like, you know, don't focus on that one thing in your life, that negative thing. If you don't focus on that, and you'll miss everything else in the life. So you open your mind and think out and you can do that. So I love that.
I mean, you know, he wrote a book called Striking Thoughts. I don't know if you've read that.
No, I haven't.
Bruce Lee, and it's very easy to read. It's really, it's kind of like a book of sayings, and it's called Striking Thoughts. I recommend it to anybody who likes martial arts, likes philosophy, mm-hmm. isn't a martial artist, wants to improve themselves. Bruce Lee was a brilliant philosopher. He really had some extraordinary things to share with humanity. And I've been reading some of them recently, and it's amazing. He has things he said about racism. He had things that are so pertinent and timely right now.
Yeah.
Because Bruce dealt with tremendous racism.
Oh, he did.
Fighting to be a leading man in Hollywood when nobody wanted an Asian leading man.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that when they cast David Carradine in Kung Fu, which Bruce was supposed to do, they cast an Occidental in the part of an Asian. So, you know, and he has some very unique and interesting perceptions about that and many other things. You could probably find it on Amazon. I don't get a commission on it, although apparently I should. But
you should, really cool. You should too, yeah. Excellent. I'll source that one out as well. I mean, Bruce Lee's amazing. I love to, you know, the guy was just phenomenal, like you say, not just in his films as well, but he was just everything. For great philosopher too.
Anyway. It would be interesting to see. You know, a lot of times, like you see comedians, and they start out and they do their comedic films, and then something happens as they get older, and they tend to segue into drama. Like think about Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting.
Yeah,
and these comedians have so much internal pathos that many of them are far more interesting as dramatic actors than they were as comedic actors. Mm-hmm. And it would be interesting to see that after Bruce Lee had done, 3 years of martial arts films and had built a worldwide audience, to see him start playing more mainstream dramatic characters. And I think he would have turned out to have been a very fine actor.
Yeah, I do. Because I mean, his acting in the, it wasn't just the, you know, the martial arts that he did, which was phenomenal. Because the acting was absolutely outstanding, and he was a good actor. And you can see him progressing as he got better as well. But that would have been good. It would have been nice to have seen him. Obviously, tragically taken far too young, just like his son Brandon, which is another shame.
That was terrible.
It was. I mean, you know, freak accident. I mean, I used to be in the TA and playing with blanks and stuff, so I know that what they can do. You know, people think, oh, it's a blank. It doesn't.
You know, and I mean, if you've watched any of the conspiracy theories about it, it was just very strange. You know, when you're on a film set or a television set, there's always a master of arms. I mean, if you're dealing with weapons, there's always a professional there who opens the chamber, opens the clip, shows you that they're empty and that they're prop guns. And the guy either had gone home early or wasn't there. And the actor, which I can't understand, but I'm not passing judgment, didn't, you know, when you do a scene with somebody, you always say, you know, empty gun with blanks. And then you go, you know, going hot. But everybody knows what's going on. And for some reason, none of that happened. And just tragic because, you know, Brandon Lee was another one. I mean, he was destined to have a brilliant career.
Oh, he was phenomenal.
Watching him in The Crow was, you know, he was really terrific. And you could really see that, you know, fighting your way to get out of the shadow of a myth like Bruce Lee is your father, that's no easy... That's no easy feat. And, you know, the thing with the famous children, or the children of famous celebrities, there's kind of an unwritten rule. They always will get a shot. You know what I mean? They'll always get a shot to do something. But if they aren't really good, it's almost like it's twice as harsh for them. And as many children of famous actors as there have been, Kiefer Sutherland, Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez, you can go on and name a lot of them. There are a significant handful of children of extremely famous actors that were not able to parlay it into continual success. So, the long story longer, I think that Brandon Lee was really destined to do just that, to really break out of that shadow and establish himself as a force in his own right.
Definitely. I think, although I can't remember the name, and there's another film I saw him in as well before he did The Crow, obviously, because it wouldn't have been after. Stupid. And so, but that was a really, really good film as well.
It was.
I can't remember the name of it, but it was great. I was going to say, looking at your career as well, Sean, you did. I mean, I used to love Perry Mason, and I know you had a couple of roles in a couple of episodes of that. What was that like filming? Did you actually get to work with Raymond Burr on that one?
As a matter of fact, I appeared in the very last Perry Mason, so I did the last Perry Mason Raymond Burr ever did, and I did another one before that. It was wonderful working with him. Perry Mason's a household name. I mean, even generations beyond when the show was no longer on have heard of Perry Mason, and now, you know, they're redoing it.
It's already out there.
So that was really cool. That was the first one I did, was one of the earlier roles that I had, and it was terrific. Really liked it.
No, that's great. It's one of those things when, you know, when it stands out when you're looking through. It's like, oh yeah.
You know, listen, I gotta plug my my new show though.
Oh, you will. Don't worry. Go ahead.
Get there. All right.
No, it's fine. It's like that was perfectly fit in about an hour anyway. So yeah, obviously you have got a new show out. So
yeah, so I have a new show. It's called Studio City. It's a digital series streaming exclusively on Amazon Prime. And this has been my baby. I've been working on getting this made for over a decade. We finally got it made. I play the lead character, Sam Stevens, who stars as Dr. Pierce Hartley on the number 2 soap opera in the world, Hearts on Fire. And, you know, he's a guy that you look at him and you think he's got the world by the tail. And as you get to know him a little better, the layers of the onion reveal that this poor guy has got so many of the same problems that we all have. You know, we deal with a lot of social issues. We deal with ageism because Sam is no longer the young leading man. Mm-hmm. He's in the middle of contract negotiations. The producer brings on kind of a younger, more handsome version of him, you know, nipping at his heels. We deal with an amazing LGBTQ storyline. And actually, Studio City and the actor who played one of the roles in it, Scott Turner Schofield, mm-hmm. he made history, as did the show, because he's the first trans man ever nominated for an Emmy.
Wow.
So that was really cool. We deal with, the Me Too issue. And the thing is, we do it in a way that, like, we're not beating you over the head. Because at the end of the day, nobody wants to be preached to and lectured. We entertain you, but we deal with some heavy stuff. And we also set a record for the most Emmy nominations for a first-year show. We got 8 Emmy nominations, and we got 12 Independent Series Awards nominations. Wow. So, we're just trying to build our audience right now. We are not yet available in the UK, unfortunately.
I did look, son.
as we speak, planning season 2 and planning to have this distributed worldwide. And I can't wait for everybody in the UK to get a chance to see this. If you're curious and you wanted to sort of get a flavor for the show, mm-hmm. Our website is studiocity.show. And there's lots of clips, and I think you'll really dig it. You know, it's a drama, but there's a lot of stuff to laugh about.
All right, excellent. That sounds brilliant. It does sound great. I mean, and tackling those issues, I think, is very important in today's society, because it's something that's a very hot topic. It's we're trying to make sure and trying to get that equality for everybody, regardless of your skin color, whether regardless of your gender, or regardless of your belief, anything like that.
I think. As a world, we're a lot more evolved now, but with mm-hmm. being a more evolved world comes a lot more responsibility and a lot more complexity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's, and I think it's important that, you know, if you're going to have a show that is a dramatic show, that you inflect some of what's going on in the world into that show, mm-hmm. thereby making it more believable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Can't wait to look to see it. I was going to say as well, obviously, I've got a few questions which were sent in from people, which is standard, which is brilliant. Yeah. There's someone on Twitter she goes by the handle of Dorothy, but her name is Emma. And it's something she actually says she loves your character. She loves, obviously, all the roles that you've been in. But she wants to learn more about Sunset Beach because she loves your character in there, Jude. And she likes
it. Really well received in the UK, wasn't it? I think it was kind of
It did go well.
More popular there than here. Well, okay. So I got brought on for like what I didn't know was going to be the last 6 months of the show. Mm-hmm. They were already kind of dismantling the show. I came on. It was cool. It was an Aaron Spelling show. I had the chance to work and meet Leslie Ann Down, who I adore. Fabulous English actress, beautiful. And then we were actually lovers on The Bold and the Beautiful, and I got to really know her, you know, and I got to really listen to her. Just so many cool, great stories. Her husband's a really cool guy. Don's a director. And, I could just sit and listen to her tell stories about Mick Jagger and Jack Nicholson all day long. So Sunset Beach. So I came on the show with some guy named Jude Kavanaugh. And then the very last episode, apparently I was indeed Special Agent Jude Kavanaugh. So, for me, that was kind of just, it was a job. I mean, it was fun, but it was only 6 months. So it wasn't really, I don't rank it with sort of General Hospital and Bold the Beautiful and The Young and the Restless, which I did for multiple years. Hope that answered the question.
That's great. No, thanks. I'm sure that has answered that for him. That was great. I say General Hospital was a great run.
I did. I think I did about 650 episodes of General Hospital, and I probably did about 500 or 600 of Bold and the Beautiful.
Nice. So. Like you say, that's a success. I mean, to be having two shows like that where you've done that much. That must be a phenomenal feeling.
Really fortunate. You know, it's wonderful being on some of these soap operas because they've got a built-in audience. So, you know, you do the show for like a month and you're kind of known once it starts airing in other countries worldwide. You know, Bold the Beautiful is in the Guinness World Book of Records as the most syndicated show in the world. I think it's still in 47 different countries. And it has really given me this whole wonderful other career in life in Italy. I work in Italy frequently. Mm-hmm. And I when I found out how popular the show was in Italy, I began studying Italian like 10 years ago. Okay. And it was one of the smartest things I ever did. Yeah. And it's allowed me just to have this incredible other experience in another country that I would have probably otherwise never had.
Fantastic. I noticed that as well. You are a multiple linguist. You speak several languages, or you learn to speak several languages.
I can mangle a couple languages. I've been studying Mandarin now for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I really like that. It's difficult. It's really difficult, but it's fun. And it's interesting. My teacher lives in China, but she speaks excellent English, and it's interesting communicating with someone twice a week from China, because you know there's so much in the news about, you know, the friction between America and China.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting to interact with somebody that's from this faraway place that you really only hear about in the news.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the world a much smaller and more connected place, I think, to interact with people across the globe.
Definitely. I mean, I've got a degree in German. I spoke fluent German. So that's one language, not as many. But Mandarin, I did want to learn that at one stage, but I gave up because it is really difficult.
It's great. Yeah, I got a great teacher if you want, and it's very inexpensive.
Maybe one day. Excellent. Sarah Dawn Lawson, she's had a question. She's actually asked you a question. And I was going to sort of elaborate on that, because obviously with Karate Kid Part 3 that you were, you know, Mike Barnes.
Yes.
Are you always going to be known as the karate's baddest boy? Because Mike, he wasn't the best, was he?
That is the moniker from the film. So Karate Bad. You know, it's funny. With the success of Cobra Kai, and like, I think, you know, Karate Kid 3 is on Netflix right now, and they run it over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole new generation of fans for the Karate Kid films. And it amazes me that this is a film that I did over 30 years ago. And it's still, there's so many fans for the film. You know, it's funny. I get sent stuff all the time. Like somebody just sent this to me. You know, they make these little cards, and you know, people want photos, and it's a lot of fun. And the fans for the Karate Kid films and Cobra Kai are amazing fans. I mean, the only other fans I would rival them with are the soap opera fans. They're just so loyal, and I really try hard to stay connected with them.
Excellent. I mean, I think that's one of the things that does happen is because the cast of Karate Kid and Cobra Kai especially is very, very involved with the fans. And it is. I mean, I've been to several fandoms over the I've been doing this about 5 years, and I get involved with several fandoms, and there are one or two which stick out. And this Karate Kid and the Cobra Kai one, like you've just said, they're just so loyal. They're so lovely, welcoming people. And they'll just,
You know, we're really appreciative for the fans, though. I mean, it's a gift that, you know, we're still sort of front and center in their minds after all of these years. And I, you know, there's that whole mixed thing where like some people who are actors, they're like, well, you know, I don't just because I'm an actor and you recognize me doesn't mean that I owe you anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you can ask for an autograph, and it's like I always try to accommodate people when they express interest in me as an actor. I find it incredibly flattering, and more than that, generally everyone's very nice, and more often than not I wind up making a really nice connection with somebody. And you know, to this day I've got certain people that sort of began as fans, And, you know, I consider them friends. And it's nice. It's kind of a gift that I've got this business card that's an icebreaker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They recognize me and they feel comfortable enough to come up to me and initiate a dialogue.
That's really good. It's lovely to have that and sort of, yeah, to see that coming back. But there are, I think, as I say, there are some out there, but you guys, since Cobra Kai came along, like you said, I've been welcomed into this thing just doing what I do. And everyone's all of a sudden, it's like all the cast, like yourself, are all getting involved and talking.
So have you interviewed some of the cast from Cobra Kai?
I have, yeah.
You should ask some of these young kids, say, do you realize that in a very short amount of time, you're going to become internationally famous? Do you understand what that means?
Yeah.
And I didn't understand what that meant till I did The Bold and the Beautiful. And it's insane. I mean, we think of internationally famous as, Brad Pitt and all of that sort of stuff. But some of these shows, like Cobra Kai is going to be, syndicated or distributed throughout the world. One day you're kind of used to nobody really knowing who you are. And suddenly you've got a woman running up to you speaking Polish, telling you how much she loves watching you in Krakow. it's a little weird.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'd love to get the kids. I mean, at the moment I've had Erin Bradley Danger. She's been on there. Rose Bianco, who plays Zhao Long's grandma. She's been on. Dustin Lewis and Matt Lewis, they've been in, and Susan Gallagher as well. So I've had been chatting to a few. They're fantastic actors as well, but obviously they've been, a couple of episodes in if Cobra Kai, so they're brilliant in it. So I'm looking forward to I'd love to get the kids on. That'd be amazing one day. So Candace Graba, she would like to know what your favourite episode of Cobra Kai is, since we're on the topic. What was your favourite episode and who's your favourite character?
Oh, that's a tough one. I really like the episode in season one when Billy and Ralph were sitting at the bar. And
brilliant.
It's obvious that they don't care for each other, but by the time their little interaction is over for the day, they're singing together in the car, and I just think that was great. And I really like the pilot because you don't know. Johnny Lawrence was a rich kid, and then you see that he's like putting up the television in some lady's place, and he gets a call from a guy named Mike, and a lot of people have inferred that maybe
it was Mike Barnes. Yeah,
maybe we know the secret to what happened to Mike Barnes. Maybe Mike Barnes owns a handyman. I don't know. I was so funny if Mike Barnes turned out to be like an anger management coach.
Yeah, that would figure. That'd be a nice turnaround for it. It would actually work in code because that's how it ended.
I was such an angry kid. I just was able to finally deal with some of my issues.
Fair enough. It would work in Cobra because I say that's the whole thing about Cobra Kai, because it spins 180 degrees on the original films. And that's how that pilot episode, Billy, was, oh my God, I was in hysterics watching it. He was just
wonderful. Ralph too, but Billy did a wonderful job in this role. And, Billy's a friend. I don't see him often, but I see him from time to time. And I'm so happy for him. He's a terrific guy. And, he's always been successful, but Billy is now experiencing the kind of super mainstream across the board success that he and Ralph both deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're great guys. I've not spoken to them or met them, but yeah, looking at them and seeing the back to behind the scenes and speaking to everybody I've spoken to who's worked with them, it's just a phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that's the result I get. Excellent. I've got a question before I start wrapping this up, because obviously I know time's getting on. I need you here when we get back to your day. I've got a signature question which I ask everybody. It's a completely off the wall. It's a personality question. And the reason, the quick background is, I had a gentleman on my show called Mike Quinn, and he plays in Return of the Jedi. He was Nine Num, the guy with the red jumpsuit at the end of Return of the Jedi. He's been in everyone. He's also been a Muppeteer. With Jim Henson for 30-odd years.
Right. So
if you could have a Muppet created after you, your own personality, what Muppet would it be, or what kind of Muppet would it be? And it could be an existing one, or a mix of one, or a totally new one. I guess it'll have to be martial arts type one.
Are you talking about what Muppet closely approximates?
Yeah, your personality, yeah.
I think my wife would say probably like one of the old men up in the balcony that just kind of...
Statler and Waldorf.
Boy, that's really a tough... That's a really random...
It is, isn't it?
Oh, man. Kermit is sticking in my head for some reason. I don't know why. I mean, I'd like to say animal or someone really bombastic like that, but
yeah.
Believe me, I have my times when I am animal. But I think we all probably have little bits and pieces of each Muppet in our personality. It's not the best I can do with this question right now. It's indeed one for the ages.
It is. Yeah. It's a good one, isn't it? It makes you think.
If you were a female porn star, which one? And what would be your specialty?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and so, I mean, that's a great answer for the Muppet one. That's good. Yeah, I mean, is there anything you'd like to say? I mean, I know we've got, there's so much more I'd love to talk to you about because I know you're anti-brilliant and everything. So if just a final message that people are watching or listening will be good.
Yeah, you know, I wish everybody would go check out a little bit of Studio City on our website, studiocity.show, in anticipation of it eventually coming to the UK. And, you know, I really try and stay in touch with my fans. If they'd like to follow me, they can follow me on Twitter at Sean Kanan and on Instagram at Sean.Kanan. I also have a film out this month on Showtime, which is Beyond the Law with Steven Seagal and DMX. So if you like thriller action films, that's what, it's a fun film. Just came out a little while ago. And that's about it. Right now I'm really pouring myself into getting season 2 of Studio City done and finishing my new book, which I'm going to have out before Christmas. And I'm going to come back and talk to you so I can promote it.
And I look forward to that. That'd be great. I'd love to. Yeah, brilliant. Cheers.
Appreciate this, having the time to talk with you and your audience.
No, thank you. Thank you very much.